I love a quiz. If I'm in a conversation and someone needs to know anything, I feel for a second as if I'm on a big-time American quiz show, that if I answer the question right, it will be like, correct, 5 points. My life would be a lot better if every time that happened, this happened. Here's my friend Maeve.
What was the name of that film again, with Bette Davis in the jungle?
The Letter. Well done, Josie. 5 points and you go on to the bonus next level.
One of the main reasons for this week's quest to understand science and nature is to make me unbeatable at Trivial Pursuits, the final elusive bit of cheese or pie or whatever your family decided to call it. I'll have mastered them all, except the sports questions. But then, who cares how tall Kevin Keegan is? That's not even sports trivia. That's sports trivia trivia. So I looked in my library for books that were at least in the right subject area, but it's woefully inadequate. The only books I have are The Kingfisher Pocketbook of Animals, which I won in an RSPCA competition in 1993, aged 10. And I know that because my mum's written that into the front of the book in felt tip. I also have a set of books on birds, mammals, fish and reptiles that my dad won in a competition between the Scouts and London Zoo in 1966. In 1966, my dad was 15 years old. What a loser, still being in the Scouts at 15. When I was 15, I was crowd surfing to Angstrock and doing it. Hi, Dad, it's me.
Hi, Josie, how are you?
I'm all right. I've been reading your animal books. Can I ask you, how did you come about getting those?
Well, when I was a Scout, I was asked if I'd go with some cubs to London Zoo to take part in Zoo Quest. And they were all filling out these questionnaires while they were going round. And I thought, well, I might as well join in, and so I also got a questionnaire, and I filled it out, and all the way round, there were these little information things that you could listen to, and I was listening to all of these, and filling out the answers, and to my surprise, I got a letter from the zoo saying that I'd won a prize, and the prize was the books.
But doesn't that mean you just entered a competition for little kids?
Well, no, because I think there were different age groups. I don't think I was competing with the cubs.
Brilliant. Have a nice afternoon.
Yes, you too.
Bye.
Yep. Bye.
Wow, my dad, the sneaky teen, cheating at a quiz for younger kids. So there I was, happily mocking my sweet, nature-loving father, when my mum pulled out an old letter from the RSPCA to me, aged 9, in 1991. Now, her and my dad divorced years ago, so she should be on my team. And I have no idea why she kept it this long, but here is what it said.
Dear Josie, thank you so much for your wonderful cartoon, which we all enjoyed reading. We've taken a copy of it to put in our office, but thought you might like the original back, as it must have taken you a lot of work. Please find enclosed a leaflet on hamsters.
So what that means is that I sent a letter unsolicited into the RSPCA, and they hated it so much, they sent it back.
What should we do with this cartoon here?
That, send it back, is awful.
But she's 9 years old.
I don't care. Give it here. I'll wipe my arse on it. Wait a minute. Put this leaflet on hamsters in with it.
But the cartoon is about rabbits.
I know.
I'd completely forgotten about the phase of my childhood when I'd been a tubby animal rights campaigner. I'd gone vegetarian for a week until my parents had a barbecue. I deliberately pushed that part of my life and all of the things I'd learnt to the back of my mind, and I know why. It's all well and good for children to care a lot about horses and bears, but the last thing you want is to be some kind of creepy animal grown-up. Animal-loving adults do not get a good press. Old men who take their ferrets to the pub and smell of ammonia. Vegans. People who say,
I love animals more than I love people, me. A dog won't ever let you down. People are cruel.
And I think, no, it's just that people don't like you is what it is. And then that person proceeds to allow their dog to French kiss them as if that's acceptable under any circumstances. But these books reminded me that as a child, I loved finding out facts about animals in the natural world. And that's not creepy. There always seemed to be so many details and statistics to discover. It was like I was consuming them, eating it all up, which was my second favourite thing. And this book is so full of choice little gems. My book says,
if you watch a small bird in a park, you will notice that it spends a great deal of its time looking all around. This is because, for small birds and many other animals, life is full of danger. Predators can attack by surprise at any time.
And I thought, it's not doing that because of predators. It's because you're watching it. It's thinking, what? Have I got something on my beak? What? What? Stop it. What a revelation, though, that even tiny birds have so much going on that we wouldn't realise just looking at them. And that something's whole lives are that fraught and full of danger. It makes me feel warm and fond about my suburban childhood. I had a life where I could get up, have a wash, eat my pink breakfast cereal and sit down to amass some facts with no danger of being snatched off by a hawk. Can you imagine how excited I was as a tubby 10-year-old to read?
Many small animals spend part of their lives inside their food.
Amazing. Me, swimming around inside a giant jar of lemon curd. Or lemon cheese, because it would have been before my parents split up, so I was still pretty middle class back then. If you're 8 years old, a fact alone is enough to justify a conversation. Did you know, actually, that a female herring lays 500,000 eggs? I wish that was more normal in adult life. I'm so sick of having to have anecdotes and heart-to-hearts and try to make good impressions on people and talk to them. I just want my phone conversations to be...
Hi, Josie, how are you?
Hi. The Ulm is a blind salamander with transparent skin that lives underground, hunts for its prey by smell and electrosensitivity, and can survive without food for 10 years.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. Or better still.
Hi, tell me some facts about owls.
Happy to. Smallest owl, elf owl, 15 centimetres head to toe. It's known for its erratic, belligerent behaviour. It suffers from irritable owl syndrome. Most useful owl, the tea owl, good for the kitchen. Its larger relatives are bath owl, beach owl and the beautiful, pristine guest owl that you keep in the spare room. The cruelest owl, Simon owl, judges all the other birds singing.
That chirping sounds like a dog falling into a meat grinder.
And you've got a Southeast Asian swift being helped out of the audition room, sobbing, saying, please, Simon, this was my last chance.
Those aren't facts, Josie, they're just puns.
Sorry, Maeve, I can't hear you over the background noise. Did you say those were great facts?
No, and what background noise? And I said...
Sorry, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. It's not entirely a bad thing to have only children's books. I can respond to them with the same kind of enthusiasm and earnestness I had when I first got given them. I can now tell you about a couple of my all-time favourite animals.
Number one.
The antlion. It's just a really big ant. And what it does is it lurks at the bottom of a pit. And if anything walks past that pit, it kicks sand in their faces. Nature's bully, ladies and gentlemen.
And number two.
Trapdoor spider. What the trapdoor spider does is it digs a burrow and waits at the bottom of it. And if anything touches the trapdoor, the sound reverberates down the burrow and it hears it. And then it runs up, grabs the thing and eats it. And that's exactly the same as me sitting at home waiting for my housemates to get back from work. Just... Is that the key in the door? No. Is that the key in the front door? Patience. That's it! Hi, I've been on my own all day. Please play with me. Are you going to the kitchen? Yeah, I'm going to the kitchen as well. Is that, what are you doing? You're eating corn. Why are you eating corn? What's that? Is that corn? What's corn?
Number three.
The lungless salamander of Mexico. It breathes through its skin and mouth lining and commits robberies, probably.
You said a couple of your favourite animals, but that's three.
Yeah, but that's not my fault. When I was a kid, I asked my mum what the word couple meant, and she said two or three. And she wonders why her marriage didn't work out. I think the third animal is my favourite anyway. I love that as a kid you get excited by the grossest things. You can embrace ugly-looking things for the fascinating data that comes with them. What's interesting about a cat compared to the Sagala caecilian, a limbless amphibian with sensory tentacles on the side of its head? The names alone of such things are a revelation. Like moths. Moths are spectacular little creatures, and yet everyone hates them. They're like, oh no, get them away, they're dusty, the light bulb, I hate them. But if you knew their names, you would not treat them like that. You'd treat them with the respect they deserve, because they are all named, seemingly, after supervillains and pro wrestlers. The clouded buff, for example. The Chinese character, for example. That's just two examples. I could list seven examples. If you knew their names, the next time you went into the bathroom and saw two of them flitting about, it wouldn't be all like, oh, get them out, get them out. You'd be like, finally, Cinnabar takes on the dark board of beauty. Destroy him. I'll hold him against the wall with a toothbrush. Finish him off. KO. Look, Vaporer enters. That's another moth coming into the room. Unless you have a flatmate named the Vaporer. But if that's the case, then the moths are the least of your problems. Hey, how was your day at work, Vaporer?
Satisfactory.
Can I have one of your sausages?
I will annihilate you.
I'll just wait until he goes out.
Where has my sausage gone?
I think you ate it, Vaporer.
Does not compute. System error. Why can't I cry real tears?
Because the Vaporer is a robot in my head. And why should only good-looking things get a look-in? 90% of the animals on Earth are insects, mollusks or arachnids. All of the cute stuff, everything, mammals, birds, fish, even reptiles and amphibians only make up 10% of the living things. Invertebrates outnumber vertebrates many, many times over. If there was a fight, they'd totally wipe the floor with us. But it won't come to that.
Why not?
They haven't got the backbone. Who says I can't write a joke, huh? And I understand it's hard to convince yourself it's a socially acceptable hobby. The last thing I want is to end up as someone who dresses up as a panda and has sex with someone dressed as a lioness. That is only a step away from marrying a favourite bull, which I will never do again. But it can be helpful to your adult life to make that effort. Any argument you want can be justified from the vast treasure trove of nature facts, like the fact that polar bear's milk has nearly 110 times as much fat as cow's milk to keep them tubby and warm.
Childhood obesity is just us trying to turn our children into polar bears, because otherwise there wouldn't be any polar bears left. Is that what you want? Is that what you want? No more polar bears? Oh.
And anything sounds poetic if you put in an animal metaphor. Swifts have such strong wings that they can stay in the air for weeks at a time, but their feet are so tiny they cannot hop or walk. That's a metaphor for something, isn't it? They can't hop or even walk because they can fly for so long. It's a metaphor for something. We can make connections between the animal world and our own in an inspiring way. The vast pilgrimages animals take, the hardships they endure, like butterflies. North American monarchs go from Mexico and California to Canada. They spend the winter down south, clustered round trees, and the summer playing professional basketball. Go monarchs! I anthropomorphise animals, for good and for ill, all of the time. But the thing is, they don't need livening up. Making animals seem more like people makes them less interesting. It's missing the point. Animal facts absolutely light up your world by being so different to your everyday life. The natural world is so big and so strange, is better than fiction. One of my favourite things about London is that statistically, anything you can imagine is here. Somewhere in London right now, there are cannibals in a knitting group. That one is actually listed in Time Out. The natural world is the same. You only have to look at pictures of creatures from the bottom of the sea to see it's greater and weirder than you can guess.
They're bioluminescent. They give off light.
It reminds me of when I was at the Tokyo Natural History Museum, and they have an audio guide there, which is a bloody good thing. Not least because, no offence, but all of it's in foreign. Not even words, pictures. Seriously, no offence. That is an impression of my stepsister. And the guide is voiced by an actor who said,
"As a child, I loved science, but as I grew up, I left it behind. But talking to the scientists who work at this museum and sharing in their enthusiasm for their fields of work and their excitement about what there was left to find and find out brought me back to being a child again."
And I thought, you've got it. Otherwise you go on a bit nothing. But you've got it. Good facts are like the most endangered amphibians, hard to find. Or like the creatures at the bottom of the sea, you might not yet know the choicest, most exciting ones. And I'm really proud of my inherited dorkiness. The fact that my mum has drawn a luminous green dot on my face so that she can find me easily in my university matriculation photograph. Because she's proud of her dorky child's achievement. Or that my dad persists in telling me cheesy jokes. So I've decided to just embrace it. Hi Dad, it's me again.
Oh, hi, Josie.
I've written a joke for you. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. What amphibians are the best interviewers?
I don't know. What amphibians are the best interviewers?
The axolotl, because they axolotl questions. What do you think?
I think that's a big groan.
What? Oh, my gosh. Oh, Dad, by the way, sorry, I forgot. I picked up a folder by mistake when I was at your house. I think it's yours.
Really? What was in it?
Hang on. The Brownies and World Wildlife Fund Under 10s Colouring Competition. Winner 2007, Jeff Long. The Windsor Safari Park Kids Quiz. First place, Jeff Long. Long Leap Teen Zookeeper of the Year. Oh, Dad, you're up to your old tricks again.
I just love a quiz. Is that so wrong?
No, it's not.
That's correct for 5 points. All of the planet's wonders, shown in detail, was written by and starred Josie Long, Maeve Higgins, Jeff Long, Chris Neal, and me, America's radio sweetheart, Jesse Thorne. It was produced by Colin Anderson.